Good morning, listeners. We are at Friends of the Earth, a special show, 3CR Friends of the Earth combination. It's a co-op for sustainable breakfast, and this is a series. This is, I think, the last day of the series, isn't it?
Oh, it's Friday. Oh, yes.
Everybody hates work. Okay, come down and join us for brekkie at 312 Smith Street, Fitzroy. It'll be fun. Vegetarian, of course. Now, let's give you a rundown of the show. We have a...
We have TV's Cam Walker coming up from Friends of the Earth.
Yes. And we have Melissa Corbett, yes?
Yes.
Yes. And who's she?
She's been involved with the New International Bookstore. She's involved with Earthworker Co-op. She's a feminist, activist, eco-socialist, so... Yeah.
And all that. Yep. Okay, we also have Margarita Windich, who is a long-term feminist and eco-socialist, who has done her master's and a thesis on women, heat waves, and food. So we should have a really great morning this morning. And we have good music. Zane, you've been in charge of music.
Yeah.
What are you playing?
Well, to wrap it up, me and Siphon are going to have a freestyle over some beats from Jay Dilla.
So sounds good.
It's going to be deeply festive.
Sounds wonderful to me. So, what's on the menu this morning, guys?
Yummy! Here we are. What's on the menu today? Breakfast with Friends of the Earth. Here, right now.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy and chili and yummy.
Good morning. Come on down to Friends of the Earth this morning, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood, and join the wonderful breakfast team and Friends of the Earth Food Co-op as we're serving up frittata for Friday. So it's a beautiful japonica, pumpkin, spinach frittata. We've got two versions, there's vegetarian and vegan too. And yeah, so that's gluten-free, and you can have it with some beautiful toast from Crumbs Vegan Organic Bakery also, and of course our house-made muesli. And yeah, for folks who don't know us already, we were one of Melbourne's first food co-ops, and we've changed a lot over the years, but still our focus is on providing affordable bulk food in bulk. So you can bring your own containers and refill them here, so you can make your home almost totally waste free by shopping here.
And how long's food co-op been going for?
Almost 40 years now, so yeah, just a little bit younger than 3CR.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just started out in the back of a house in Carlton, pretty small, and in the early days it was quite interesting because, co-op members used to have to meet the farmers themselves in the wee hours of the morning to get their bulk sacks of goods. And of course, now we've got all these distributors and the industry's really grown. But yeah, we were part of supporting that happening in the early days, which is pretty cool.
Now, I have to ask you this question. It's been killing me for a long time. The name of your organization is Friends of the Earth, but the acronym is FOL. How do you reconcile that?
Yes, friend to some and foe to our corporate enemies.
It's a call for friends and foes, is it? To get together.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But we are a really friendly mob, and we have our food co-op and the cafe. Is largely run by volunteers, much like 3CR. So if people are interested, you can come and volunteer in exchange for the beautiful organic mix plate of the day and tea and coffee and discount on your shopping in the store. And yeah, it's really fun to get involved with, so highly recommend it.
Sounds good. Makes me feel hungry already. I haven't had brekkie yet, so I shall wait to eat the food. I cut the tomatoes, so it should be extra good.
Yeah, it will be.
All right, so let's move on to the Green Left Radio
intro.
Is that me? Yes, let's go.
Green Left Weekly Radio. There is one newspaper that is independent of powerful interests, and that's Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, environmental sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas mainstream media won't.
It's the leading source of local, national and international news, analysis and discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movements.
It exposes the lies and distortions of the power brokers and helps us to better understand the world around us.
Yeah.
What's amusing you?
There's lots amusing me.
We have lots of news. This is, of course, with the front page. We're not giving you a bourgeois newspaper summary. We're going to talk about...
Not this week, anyway.
No, not any week. Thank you very much.
Hang on. we owe our listeners a belated introduction, by the way. I'm Zane.
I'm Lalitha Chalaya. Sorry about that. That is a belated introduction. It started badly.
So this is Green Left Radio as part of 3CR Breakfast, and we're coming at you live from Friends of the Earth. All right, so we're going to do a condensed radical news for the morning, and then there's like a billion interviews after that. So we're packing in the news early. Now, people may have been following outrage over New South Wales anti-protest law. The New South Wales Mineral Council Chief Executive Stephen Galilee is keen on new anti-protest laws in New South Wales. He claims to be concerned about the safety of workers as well as the protesters illegally accessing mine sites. So these new laws have been introduced. Activists can be fined up to $5,500 for participating in protests, which is about 10 times what the fine for such an action was until these new laws came in. And you can get up to 7 years jail for participating in these protests. Meanwhile, fines for mining companies illegally doing things like expanding coal mines or fracking for CSG, these fines have come down from something in the vicinity of $1 million to less than $5,000. So today in New South Wales, you can be fined more for protesting ongoing coal exports or for protesting CSG trashing the Pilliga Forest. You can be fined more for doing that than for illegally drilling a coal seam gas well without approval.
Isn't that so draconian? And we call ourselves a democracy. I find this just simply appalling. And this means that the other states around Australia can follow this, can't they, if that's successful in New South Wales.
Yeah, and there's been some precedent in Tasmania and Western Australia with these anti-protest laws, but it's kind of like a race to the bottom or a one-upmanship thing, and that the New South Wales laws, I think, are the harshest yet.
Yes. Sounds bloody awful, to say the least. But can we do a really...
There's great rage and furious anger north of the border, and looks like we can expect to see people defying the laws and continuing to protest. So.
Talking about protests, we have... a massive march this Sunday, Palm Sunday March.
Yes, the march for refugees.
Come and make this the biggest march you've ever been to. Really, really important, given the refugees are suffering in Manus and Nauru and the way they're being treated by the Australian government. Even Amnesty International has labelled the refugee laws of Australia as the most draconian laws in the world. And there's an article in Green Left Weekly if you want to read about it. I did an interview with one of them last week. So it's going to be really, really important. Please come to the march. It starts about 2, but you can turn up at 1, 1.30, and it'll be massive from what I understand.
Epicness. Now, Berta Cáceres.
Yes.
We might talk a little bit more about Berta with a couple of our guests, but
yes.
For those who were not aware... A very like decorated environmental and social activist from Honduras was murdered. We don't know who by, but it's by the powers that be.
Military.
Yeah. And so this happened, what, about 2 weeks ago?
Yep, a week and a half ago. Berta Cáceres won the Goldman Environmental Prize in 2015. She's a very, very high-profile environmental campaigner. She's from the Lenca indigenous people of Honduras, And she has won some massive victories against some global companies like Siemens and so on. And they have challenged Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton actually is working hand in glove with the Honduran government. And this murder of Bertha has hit the press. And 2 days ago, Nelson Garcia, a very close colleague of Bertha, was also gunned down. He was shot 4 times in the face. So that's another outrage. And they both belong to an organization called COPEN, which is specifically designed to address food issues for the indigenous people, their self-esteem issues, and solidarity issues. So many of the indigenous communities in Honduras have been put down to an extent. They have been drained of their self-confidence and self-esteem. Bertha's organization, COPEN, has helped solidarize these people and to an extent where she's won massive victories. That organization has won victories even against the World Bank. That's how powerful that has been. So we pay our respects to Bertha Cáceres. We'll talk more about it because Friends of the Earth has released a statement about this as well. And, of course, Nelson Garcia now. Now, the other person, the other issue is that another very close colleague of Bertha, Gustavo Castro, who has been also targeted, he remains in Honduras, and the courts have passed judgment that he's got to stay. He was holding Bertha when she died, and he had blood all over his shirt. He was forced to stay in those clothes for 2 days in prison, and he's totally distraught about that, of course. I spoke to Belle, who was a close colleague of Bertha, and she said he was just devastated. The whole organization has been devastated. But they're marching on with the support of Gustavo, despite this setback. And at the moment, even the lawyer for Gustavo Castro has been suspended from his duties for 15 days. So it's a massive setback for the Honduran indigenous people and left politics in Latin America. Mm. So it's a very sad week and a half we've had. And we'll talk about more of the politics of that later on. What else do we have in the news or announcements? We also have a women's forum on the 22nd of March, which is next Tuesday. This is actually an announcement. And the speakers will be Brie Carlton from Monash University, a researcher into women in prisons. Karen Fletcher, who is a lifelong feminist. And it'll be held in the city. You can look it up under the Green Left Weekly website. It's at the Level 5, 407 Swanson Street in the city. And in tune with this program, with four, we are going to announce another progressive group that works towards similar aims at series. At four. The series Harvest Festival is being held on the 19th of March. Come and celebrate and give thanks to the good earth, our farmers, and the cycle of seasons with a range of entertainment, with live music, performance, free workshops, animal displays, cake baking, and so on. A lot of community and kids' activities. That is on the 19th of March, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Ceres, corner of Robert and Stewart Street in Brunswick. It's
so that's tomorrow?
Yeah, it's $5.
$5. $5. Kids are free.
And kids are free. So
they've just rebuilt the little cafe. They have two cafes at Ceres.
Yeah.
There's the one up the top.
You know all about Ceres, don't you?
I was working at Ceres for a while. There's the one at the top, which is kind of the more fancy cafe, and then there's the other cafe where you can get fresh fruit and vegetables, which I like to call the peasant cafe, which I prefer to eat there when I'm eating.
Oh, you see, you're a peasant.
Yeah, I identify more.
Sounds good to me.
I don't know. Anyway, they've just redone that cafe there and the food market, and they've kind of taken down these weird awning things, so you can look out from the cafe across the green meadows and the sunflowers and the lovely stuff at Ceres. So, yeah, should go check out the new cafe and have a coffee because the coffee's exceptionally delicious. And if you've got little ones, the Kids Adventure Habitat, it's not a kids' play area. It's an adventure habitat area where kids can go and get in the headspace of various native animals and so on. That whole space has been done up. There's a cool nest for kids to play in. There's this kind of ant hill. So if you haven't been there with the little ones, you really owe it to yourself and to them to go and check it out, because it's most exciting.
Okay, talking about kids, we've got childcare workers who are fighting for equal pay. They have protested outside Malcolm Turnbull's office. So if you want to look up more details about that news, do go to the Green Left Weekly website. And of course, we had the Mardi Gras in Sydney recently, and yay to gay LGBT community. And we need more solidarity for people who are marginalized and who are seen as a minority in the society. We also have,
and to defend a safe schools program.
Yes, that is massive. That is massive. The right wing of the Liberal Party is totally geared up to smash it.
Mm. Thanks for that interview last week, too, that we played.
It was good, eh?
Mm.
Now, the Christensen fellow, what's his full name? The parliamentarian from Queensland who actually
George
attended
Christensen,
the fascist demonstration.
Yeah.
That
he's
guy.
Like friends with the...
He's leading the charge against a safe school program. And quite a few of the extreme right wing of the Liberal Party is going behind him. Apparently, the 40 MPs who opposed the program. It's a pissy little program. It's funded like only $1 or $2 million.
Hmm. Compare
that to the counseling program.
For schools to opt in. It's not even like it's mandatory service.
What I don't understand is they say that kids are going to be turned into lesbians and gays by this program. Where do they get these ideas from? I just don't get it. Do you, Zane?
No, I think the only social engineering that's happening at the moment is kids are sort of bullied and told that it's not okay to be different. And that's the problem, because there's a whole lot of self-harm and suicide amongst queer youth. And that's what this program aims to address. It says it's not acceptable to bully people who have a different sexuality or gender identity to you.
An example of that is an Indigenous person, a child, 10-year-old, who committed suicide a week and a half ago. And that's to do with low self-esteem and depression. Gives you the extent to which kids actually suffer. I have to say this. Christopher Pyne, who I do not admire, to say the least, came out in support of the Safe Schools program. He said he's got kids and kids are being bullied. He wants them to be able to reach out for help. One good thing I've heard come out of his mouth. Okay, so we're going to have to wind up so we can go to the next part of the program, which is
a music some track. Stuff. That was a little band from Newcastle called the Suffragettes.
Oh, are you in it?
with a number called Whitehaven Sucks, about Whitehaven coal trashing lead forest. All right. So this morning we've now got Cam Walker. What is your title actually, Cam, at Friends of the Earth?
I'm the campaigns coordinator.
Campaigns coordinator. Yep. Yeah, sweet.
And what campaigns are you running at the moment?
We're running about 5 out of Melbourne. So coal and gas, pro-renewables campaign, one called the River Country, which is working on the inland rivers, one around forests, and the anti-nuclear and clean energy campaign.
The anti-nuclear one is hot, isn't it?
It sure is at present.
Yeah, yes. I interviewed someone the other day, and the dumping of nuclear waste in South Australia has been decided. I don't know if it's commenced. Do you
They've
know
shortlisted, I think it's 6 locations, and they're now proceeding with identifying which would be the preferred site. So this has been one in the year 2000, and it was one, I think, in about 2010. So it's been, you know, a 16-year campaign. The community has won twice, and now the government's having its third go.
Remind me of Noonkumba in the 80s. We began the campaign in the 80s and anti-nuclear. Remember the Nuclear Disarmament Party was formed around that? Hasn't gone away at all, has it? And we have a new scientist, Mr. Finkel, who likes nuclear energy.
Yes, we do. So the coalition traditionally likes uranium, and the ALP is a little bit more split on the issue. So when the coalition is in power federally, uranium always comes back onto the agenda. I don't think anyone honestly believes they'd get domestic nuclear power up in this country anymore. But I think that their hidden agenda is to, as the drop-down ask, is to get the high-level radioactive waste dump finally sited somewhere and potentially to accept international radioactive waste as well.
Are we going to have to keep campaigning against this every, like, 16 years for the next 300,000 years?
More like 30 every years, year. 30 years, 35 years, since the 80s.
You'd have to hope that if we win this round, which I think we will, because already two of the six locations, the communities have just said it will happen over our dead bodies. Mm. I think the other four, they're going to face really, you know, very stiff resistance from communities. There's going to be a point where we're going to have to... have to have a better waste management program. This new system that they're trying to put in place is very much put it out of sight, out of mind, somewhere a long way away from where it's produced.
Where it affects Indigenous
on
people.
Aboriginal
exactly.
Land. That really gets my gut. But
yes.
What, I mean, given that we're running this as a sustainable breakfast series, what is the connection that you have in your experience found between the Indigenous people, the way they preserve or like to respect the earth, and what the governments around the world really are doing today?
Well, I think in the intro before, when you're talking about the murder of Berta in Honduras, you know, as an Indigenous woman, she'd received many, many death threats. As we know, Honduras is the most dangerous place on the planet at present to be an environmental activist. And it's very fair, it's very true to say that around the planet, Indigenous people are on the front line of the environmental destruction that's happening. That's true in Latin America, it's true in North America, certainly true here in Australia. And so, you know, the uranium mines, the waste dump is on Indigenous land, of course. And, you know, then the backdrop, of course, of the shutdown of communities and the winding back of funding and the attempts to, quote, get people to assimilate. So it's part of a much bigger problem that just doesn't recognise Indigenous sovereignty and certainly doesn't recognise their, in a meaningful way, their right to self-determination.
Dennis, I should mention Dennis has joined us, our regular co-host. Have you got a question for Cam?
Well, hello and good morning. Well, actually, I did want to... I did want a question more about the assassination of Berta and other, and actually other comrades who have actually been assassinated in Honduras since then. There seems to be this campaign for extermination for any environmental activists sort of in the area there.
Yes, there's. I was just looking up the figures. It's actually terrifying that we've known that for the last 5 years it's been the most dangerous place on the planet in terms of being an activist. But in 4 years, between 2010 and 2014, 101 people were murdered for being activists. Berta's group, which she helped co-found in the early 90s, and its acronym is COPINA, and it's the National Council of Popular and Indigenous Organisations. One of their members was murdered last year, just shot dead at a protest. It has their campaigns have a very strong focus on supporting the rights of the Indigenous communities. Close to a third of that mining license applications at present. There's a very high level of corruption, and anyone that stands up against that runs the risk of being murdered. Now, since that happened, as was mentioned before, Nelson Garcia has been killed. He was another member of her group. But 8 of the 9 coordinators of their group have all been taken into custody, have been interrogated for long periods of time, up to 2 days, and released without charges. So clearly there's a level of harassment and intimidation that's continuing, in spite of the fact that 2 people have been murdered in less than a week.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've noticed is Hillary Clinton is working very closely with the Honduran government. There's a record of it.
Well, she brought that government to power through a coup, so that might explain why.
Yes. In the current climate, given that she's running for
president,
the primaries, Democrat and so on, that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is the political situation in relation to the Earth, mm-hmm. and you are the director of Friends of the Earth. You're director, aren't you? Yes, you are.
Campaigns coordinator,
sorry. Not hearing very well in my old age. But, you know, it's a very difficult nexus. How do we go forward with this? You know, it's a crucial question for us to tackle, because if they keep killing off activists, this is a woman who won the World Environment Prize, for God's sake, and they've killed her off, and they're getting away with it.
There is impunity in Honduras. And it's interesting that Berta's family have called for a full and transparent investigation. Sometimes when there is oppression, there will be a point where the oppression becomes unsustainable. And we have to hope that her death is that point where people will no longer put up with this, that corporations will be held to account, that the European companies, for instance, that are investing in the dam that she's been resisting, will withdraw their funding. I think, you know, we have to hope that... this will be a turning point in that country, but we need a level of safety. A member of Friends of the Earth Mexico was with her the night she was murdered. He was wounded and he's had to seek refuge in the Mexican embassy because he's not been allowed out of the country. So at this point, the Honduran government is not supporting the victims. In effect, it's siding or it's choosing, we can only assume, to side with the perpetrators because there is ongoing harassment of members of Berta's group, and Gustavo hasn't been able to go home to Mexico. So let's hope that with enough international attention, we can start to bring a focus to this and it becomes safer for these people. And paramount to that is the need to reassert a rule of law, transparent law for all in that country, rather than impunity for corporates and for, you know, shadowy groups, which may or may not be paramilitaries, they may or may not be criminal elements.
So given that the US is totally behind the Honduran military government, what do you think people in Australia can do?
There is a petition that we have through Friends of the Earth International, and that's just sending a message that we need to get Gustavo from Faux Mexico out of the country, and we need an independent inquiry. And we know that people who are tweeting the president, who are emailing the president, who are basically mentioning the president of Honduras in public, we know that it is having an impact. These murders have continued for years and often with very little public scrutiny. And I think that sometimes when you shine the light on things, on terrible things, that actually shifts the behaviour. So I think we need to sustain the pressure on the Honduran government, and we need to continue to provide direct support in country for the indigenous and environmental groups that are on the front line of these campaigns.
Zane, you had a particular question you wanted to ask him.
Yeah, I was just keen to ask what's been happening. I know that there's been a Yes to Renewables rally earlier this year, and late last year there was a big rally declaring Victoria coal seam gas free. How have those kind of coalitions been formed, and what's happening on those fronts?
Sure, that's probably a half-hour conversation. But
short
version is the last 5 years we've been working in regional Victoria because about a third of our state was under exploration license for all kinds of gas drilling and new coal projects. It's actually quite remarkable. Our best farm country has been under license. And we've been working with more than 70 communities, and we have this community building model where we go into communities, we work with them. They door knock their whole community around the question, do you support us declaring ourselves gas field free? Mm. 72 communities have done that. They've locked off the state to the corporate gas industry, which is amazing. Mm. That in turn forced the hand of the Farmers Federation, which forced the hand of the Coalition, which forced the hand of the ALP, and we've now got a moratorium on fracking in the state. Probably in about May, the state government, the Daniel Andrews government, will need to decide what they do next, and this will be a final decision. Do they put a permanent ban in place or do they open the floodgates to it? We're doing the best we can, to convince them that a permanent ban is the way to go. But it's been an amazing campaign because it's happened in conservative areas. It's not the usual suspects that we would work with. Mm. It's deeply conservative, very National Party voting, regional communities, and they have just stepped up to the plate and they've been absolute legends and heroes in this campaign, and they've created a new environmental movement that simply didn't exist 5 years ago. Mm. And then parallel to that is Yes to Renewables, which has been also a grassroots building movement, which shifted the government, and now we the wind industry was killed off under the coalition when they were in power from 2010 to 2014, and it's going again. And what comes with that is jobs and investment and transition, because this is the 21st century technology we need. We don't need coal anymore. We actually need renewable energy. So all around, they're pretty exciting campaigns, and it will also have a final decision probably around the time of the state budget, so in May this year.
One of the key things at the moment is, I heard an interview with the international figure. He said that climate change has actually gone on a big back burner because of the refugee crisis. I'm just wondering what we need to do in this country, as a final thing for you, you've got 1 minute to go. How can we beef up this campaign?
I think we have to accept, you know, as the US saying is, we've got to walk and chew gum. You know, we can't just say only one issue will be allowed to dominate our national narrative. Refugees, asylum seekers, security, you know, the conflict, I guess, between conservative forces and modern forces, which we're seeing played out in many of the wars around the planet. Climate change, they're all issues we've got to deal with, and we need smart ways to do it. I think the People's Climate March that happened in November was a really good model, which saw trade unions and students and, you know, environmental groups and faith communities get together. I think what we need to do is do more alliance-based campaigning. And if we do that, and there was just some polling released this week that showed 47% of Australians, climate change is actually an issue for them when it comes to voting. It's just up to us to actually take that sentiment and turn it into meaningful political action.
Sounds good. Word. Thank you so much, Cam.
Thanks, Cam.
Thank you.
Great. Keep up the good work.
Yes.
You rock, Fur.
Keep joining you every year.
If People Powered Radio, an exhibition celebrating 40 years of 3CR. From the 18th of March till the 23rd of April, the exhibition will feature new work by contemporary artists, rare audio, 3CR ephemera, archival posters and photos, live on-site broadcasts, and music events. Come along to the opening night, Friday, March 18th, from 6 p.m. at Gertrude Contemporary Art Gallery, 200 Gertrude Street, Fitzroy. For more information, visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au.
All right. We're back.
Yes.
We're back on air.
And Titian's on board. What are you going to say to Titian?
Good morning, Molly. Good morning, Zane. So I guess big news for 3CR. 2016 marks 40 years of 3CR Community Radio on the air.
Yes, great.
The People's Radio. And to mark this, you know, pretty momentous occasion, because let's face it, the on the left, you know, it's not often that a radical left-wing community organisation survives very long. Friends of the Earth, another great example, but it's pretty rare, actually. So to celebrate this, 3CR has teamed up with Gertrude Contemporary Gallery on Gertrude Street there in Fitzroy, who've been around for quite a while as well, not quite as long as 3CR. And we're having an exhibition that's called If People Powered Radio, celebrating 40 years of radical radio on 3CR.
And what sort of exhibition is it? Is it art or what sort of stuff's on display?
It's a really interesting show, actually, Lali. There's quite a mix. So Gertrude has commissioned five artists, I think it is, five contemporary artists to make works responding to the themes of 3CR. So they'll have works there in the exhibition. It's taking over the whole gallery there on Gertrude. And then also in the front room, we've got some what we're calling listening stations, where people can listen to a whole lot of archival audio. So we've gone through the wild and somewhat jumbled 3CR archives and dug up some random snippets, some best ofs, and we've got a few hundred worth of different listening pieces that people can listen to right from 3CR's very first test broadcast on May Day in 1976 through to the first broadcast in July 76, right through to today. So we're giving you a snippet of all the decades that 3CR's been broadcasting.
Nice. Yeah, I was at a some kind of festive gathering at Ceres, and Raya was there, and he was telling me about trawling through the archives and finding heaps of really cool and interesting stuff.
You know, looking at history is always fun.
It's definitely inspiring, and, you know, it sort of makes you realise that, you know, you're not doing this for the first time, that people have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And, in fact, we've actually got a little snippet, an archival snippet to listen to. It's from 3CR's coverage of the Franklin River blockade, a pretty, you know, momentous event in Australian environmentalism.
Enormous. That was enormous.
And 3CR was there covering it. And for 3CR's 15th birthday in 91, some people dug up the snippets and put it together in this neat little package, which I think would be great to listen to now.
Sounds good.
As it left drawn yesterday at about 2:15 in the afternoon, after stopping overnight up at the entrance to the Gordon River, reached the Butler's Island camp at about 9:00 this morning, and was greeted by the typical flotilla of duckies and a couple of canoes.
3CR's coverage of the Franklin Dam blockade from late 1982 through to March 1983.
And what eventuated it was one kayak carrying a 16-year-old John Hawkins was taken under the barge, and John subsequently went travelled the length of underneath the barge and emerged eventually with after frightening responses from the other protesters. He emerged with some lacerations and shock was only evident later.
There's been people that have gone underneath. There's duckies all over the place. The barge stopped.
No! Yesterday, Bill Hayden came out and gave the ALP support for the blockade.
Well, of course, we're very grateful for that kind of support, and I think what Bill Hayden's recognising is the fact that this is an election issue.
Yeah, so I guess what I like about that snippet is it kind of brings up the issue of 3CR as being sort of a movement media. So, you know, as a counter to corporate mainstream media, you know, the mission of 3CR was to provide and is to provide a platform for those voices desired access to mainstream media and also to be there on the ground and to be there talking to people in the movement and giving a platform for activists.
I think the key thing about 3CR is it gives you another view of the world. It's there to prove that another world is possible. We don't have to always follow the corporate media, which is generally a mouthpiece for the people in power. And, you know, you're starved for real news, what the community is saying, what are the interactions, what are the campaigns. You don't hear about any of these things. Like, you know, Cam was talking about the five campaigns. I'm sure the people who don't listen to 3CR would have heard about it. So that is the vital role 3CR plays. And I know that alternative radio, not just 3CR, there are other radios and other media that people follow. There are 4 million people who follow alternative media. And I think 3CR's role is vital, and people like Friends of the Earth contribute enormously to that you know, that solidarity you're talking about. So that's very interesting. It's fun working with other people too.
Yeah.
You know, you work as a team.
And I should probably mention some other events that are happening as a part of the exhibition, the If People Powered exhibition that's opening tonight at Gertrude Contemporary Gallery.
So can you give them the address?
Yes,
of that?
that's a very good question. The address there on Gertrude Street is temporarily slipped my mind, but you can find it.
How long is Gertrude Street, really? It's not
as
long
as your arm.
It's not that big.
So the exhibition opens tonight at 6 p.m., so 6 to 8 p.m. Come on down for the opening. It's going to be great fun. And then we've got this really great series of events that are happening over the weeks that the exhibition's open, so opening tonight the 18th, so it's from the 18th to the 23rd of April that the exhibition's on, and so it's 200 Gertrude Street.
And that's between Brunswick and Smith Street.
Between Brunswick and Smith Street, yeah, 200 Gertrude Street. So every Friday afternoon through April, there's going to be live outside broadcast. So just like what we're doing down here at Friends of the Earth, come on down for free brekkie if you want. We're going to be doing live outside broadcasts from Gertrude Contemporary Gallery starting Friday the 1st of April, then the 8th, the 15th, then the 22nd of April and the 23rd. So,
thank you, Tishan. That was interesting. I hope people do turn up for the exhibition. It sounds fun.
Mm. And if we can just go out with a final archival snippet to give you an idea of some of the stuff that you can hear at the exhibition. Here's a snippet from Earth Matters on 3CR covering the Jabiluka campaign from 1997.
Yeah. They made them put it back in the ground.
Hello and welcome to Earth Matters, Public and Community Radio's National Environment Program, where today we'll be hearing a special on Jabiluka.
Mimi! Yay! So stopping Jabiluka mine isn't just about killing off a uranium mine. It's about the survival of this community. There's going to be no future for our children and no future for their children if Jabiluka mine goes ahead.
Jabiluka is the site of a proposed uranium mine surrounded by Kakadu National Park in the Northern Territory. If successful, it will be Australia's third working uranium mine. Australia has around one-third of the world's uranium, and there is currently extensive exploration going on into its mining potential.
We do have a responsibility that it's our place as students, as young people, as people of this country, to say that we don't want this to happen and to let other people know that it's just downright wrong. We've come here to support the Mirarr people. We've come here to back them up in what they're saying. We've come here to say, no, we don't want uranium mining. We don't want it in Jabiluka. We don't want it anywhere.
You're currently listening to 3CR's Sustainable Breakfast Series in its third year, broadcasting live from Friends of the Earth. You can join us each morning from Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March at the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op for 4 days of live broadcasts, free breakfasts and live music. Hear 3CR's breakfast presenters with campaigners, commentators and innovators talking about the most important challenge of our time, how to achieve environmental sustainability with social justice. Each morning this week, Tuesday the 15th to Friday the 18th of March, 7am to 8:30am, 3CR is broadcasting live at Friends of the Earth's Food Co-op and Organic Cafe. Find us at 312 Smith Street in Collingwood. Tune in to 3CR, 8:55am, 3CR Digital or stream us via 3cr.org.au. 3CR Sustainable Breakfast Week, supported by the City of Yarra and Friends of the Earth.
And welcome back. There's Zane, Dennis and Lalitha here. And we'll be joined by Margarita Windage, who has kindly come in this early wet morning to talk to us about a thesis she's written. She's a long-term feminist and eco-socialist, and he's done her master's on women, heatwave and food. So let's hear what she has to say. Give us a brief rundown of your thesis, Margie.
Sure. Good morning, everybody. I did my master's just a couple of years ago and finished recently, so that was a nice achievement. And
congrats.
Thank you. And I was quite stunned, and I have to say, honestly, a little bit frightened at the 2014 January heatwave that we experienced in Victoria. After the 2009 heatwave, it probably would have been one of the most severe, intense and long-lasting that we had, with some record temperatures of 44, 45 degrees nearly. And that was really quite frightening. And I thought that it might actually be a very good opportunity to start researching a bit more in how heatwaves affect vulnerable population groups. And one of the things that became quite clear in the couple of years that I was sort of doing my master's was, number one, there's very little talk about heat waves and who are mostly affected. And also there's sort of consequences, the long-term consequences, and what particular adaptation and mitigation measures are necessary. David Klinenberg, who is a sociologist. He wrote an incredible thesis on the 1995 Chicago heatwave. Now, we know that's quite a few years ago, but it made a tremendous impact because what he found was really that people who mostly died in heatwaves, and we're talking also specifically urban heatwaves, it wasn't so much necessarily the actual disaster, the natural disaster, but the surroundings of how, where these people were placed in their city that actually became the key determining factor if people are going to stay alive or not. And he called heat waves the silent and invisible killers of mostly silent and invisible people.
Hmm.
And I think that was a very telling kind of a phrase he came up with.
So if that's the case in a developed country like the USA, in an urban environment like Chicago, where there's, I guess, some chance for refuge, what about people in the North African desert or Central African areas there, or in the middle of Australia, where there's probably even less opportunity to try and escape to somewhere cool in the middle of a heat wave?
Look, I think it's probably quite a sort of interesting and complex theme, because in some ways there's something particularly vulnerable of living in big urban spaces. So big cities have actually quite vulnerable to heat waves, and in sometimes even more than some other places.
Okay.
And that's particularly because of the urban heat island effect, which basically creates up to 4, 5, 6 degrees higher temperatures in an urban environment than a non-urban environment. And that's because of the mix of bitumen, very
concrete.
Yes. Very densely built environments and no green space that might actually counter some of the heat. So poor people are particularly vulnerable in urban spaces, at times even more than maybe in a sort of desert environment.
Yeah, right.
And also people, what my research found, that often people that are in temperate climates that are not so used to heat are particularly vulnerable when heat waves come.
Yeah, right.
And while we have not seen really very high death rates in Australia, but there were some extremely high death rates in some of the heat waves in Europe in 2003 in Paris, but then also a bit later in Eastern Europe, where up to 50,000 people died.
Yeah, when you say heat wave, it also brings to mind for me bushfires. And I think the rise in temperatures, the way we use the land or we don't use the land, and the connection to food and even... And women too. You talked about how heat wave affects women differently. I wonder if you can talk to that.
Yeah, heat waves affect women. I mean, women more overall than men, and partly that is also because the biggest, I guess, group of vulnerable people and people who die in heat waves are older people. That's a key factor of vulnerability to heat waves. And we also have more women are older than men. And the other factor that's very important is that we know now is that the poorer you are, the higher your chances of being vulnerable to a heat wave, because you do not have the necessary availabilities or possibilities to make it to adapt to your climate. So in Australia and globally, women are the poorest sections of society. So that means they are more vulnerable to heat waves and they're older. And the other thing that we have found too is that social isolation is a critical factor also that makes it harder for people to be able to survive a heat wave. So old age, gender, social isolation, and especially low income are key factors for people that determine that they possibly survive or not in a heat wave.
So what can we do apart from abolishing the capitalist system and having a much more even distribution of wealth, so there's not super poor people? What else can we do to protect people from heat waves?
Look, I think it's a really tricky issue, but at the same time, I think it's probably also a very simple issue, and that is rebuilding community. One of the key things is actually having, number one, you know, having housing that's protective of heat and cold. And that means there has to be more investment, state investment, also in decent housing, retrofitting housing. But a key factor is actually rebuilding community, connecting people again with each other. The level of social isolation doesn't just kill people in heat waves. It kills them just about from loneliness, yeah, and despair. So if we can start recreating a kind of, you know, society that we should have and used to have, where we all look out for each other and share with each other, we have a much higher chance of keeping people alive and healthy and happy, I would add. So that's critical. And, of course, another critical issue is actually reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So, you know, that's the overarching... key issue for us to have to deal with.
Thank you so much, Marky. It's very kind of you to come all the way from Footscray in this
pleasure.
Wet, wet morning, and it's wonderful. Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye.
That was Flaming Edgar early in the morning. All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio. It is Sustainable Brekkie, and we're coming at you live from Friends of the Earth. And this morning, we have got our next guest, Melissa Corbett. And Melissa has been involved with the New International Bookstore, was part of the eco-socialism discussion groups, is also involved with Earthworker Co-op, so a few pots on the boil.
Definitely. Lots of pots on the boil.
So can you tell us a bit, Melissa, about the eco-socialist discussion group? It's not kind of happening at the moment, but what was the go with the eco-socialist discussion group? What would you talk about? How did it form?
So basically it was a small group of us would meet every month to look at a particular reading or text book and basically... talk about eco-socialism as a pathway to dealing with ecological crisis and building a more sustainable society. So instead of the old phrase of socialism or barbarism, it's eco-socialism or barbarism. basically that was running, I think, for over a year. I kind of got involved with it sometime early last year, around this time, I think, autumn, March, April. And early on we were looking at texts by Hans Beyer, the Melbourne University anthropologist. We were looking at some chapters that he'd developed for his next book, which is on specific demands for an eco-socialist future. So what would an eco-socialist society look like? What would the transition look like? Then later on, we were reading Michael Lurvy's introductory text, Eco-Socialism.
Hmm. Excellent.
What would it look like?
Yeah, what differentiates eco-socialism? Garden variety of socialism.
Well, I guess the emphasis on the eco part means that basically dealing with problems around ecology is at the forefront. Hmm. So ensuring that we have a sustainable society. Obviously, when really existing socialism was implemented in the past, it basically continued a lot of the very destructive capitalist production processes. And so I guess we're eco-socialists, it emphasises a clean break away from that and emphasising that we're going to have environmentally sustainable production.
And how does feminist struggle like overlap with and relate to environmental struggle? Like Margie was just talking a bit about this before, saying that women tend to live a bit longer than men, so a larger proportion of older people are women, and they're therefore disproportionately affected by social isolation, heat waves, stuff like that. What other ways do you reckon?
Well, I guess women in a lot of societies, including this one, having a more oppressed role in the society means that we're not as economically empowered. A book that I've been reading for a few months is called Eco-Sufficiency and Global Justice, and it's an eco-feminist text. And in that text, they actually go through a lot of examples of where, capitalist production and economic processes have come in and displaced women's traditional roles within the economy and made them virtually excluded from normal economic, affairs, in a way that, in the past they were quite empowered and had a role in the society. So I think that it's, in terms of ecological struggle, women's struggle is quite intertwined in that, because women are so often on the front lines of, I guess, capitalist oppression.
But Melissa, how do you think we can actually also economically empower women to really take part in the eco-socialist struggle? Do you think projects like Earthworker are the way to go on this?
Well, as far as eco-socialism is concerned, Earthworker is ideally placed to be a part of a future eco-socialist society, because eco-socialism often emphasises the need for production to be collectivised and to be community-owned, cooperatively run, so workers and members of the community have a direct say in terms of what is produced and how it is produced.
Now, what if you can explain a little bit more about what you mentioned before, capitalist production?
Yeah.
If you could spell that out a little bit more, it'll be
Yeah,
good.
Sure. So basically with capitalist production, it's the way that things are produced in a capitalist society. So from taking the raw materials, usually the process of extraction, and then making it into a commodity that would be then sold onto the market, and how that is done in a capitalist society.
What do you think of populationists? those people who say, oh, the world's greenhouse footprint is a product of the population of the planet, and therefore the way to fix it is to stop generally women in the global south from being baby factories.
Yeah.
And something that stands out for me is that in the absence of a welfare system, having a big family is your welfare system. So one of the pressures for population is the absence, is this massive inequality of global wealth and the absence of stuff like healthcare and welfare in some of these poor countries.
Yeah. Well, I think the evidence is basically saying that the rich are destroying the earth. I mean, wealthy people, in terms of their consumption, are so far and ahead in terms of creating emissions. Like, it's not even comparable to, you know, what most people in the third world are doing as far as, like, you know, contributing to our global emissions. I mean, someone who is in the 1% and has 5 yachts and flies everywhere compared to someone who's living in the global south and, you know, is living at a fairly sustainable subsistence level. I mean, it's just not comparable. So you can have many people who are living subsistence lifestyles, but is that fair? And I would say it's not fair that people are having to live in dire poverty while, you know, a small coterie of people are living with extreme wealth. In terms of population, I guess from a feminist perspective, and as a woman, the idea of having a lot of children, it can be a real, like, physical burden. And, you know, it's been proven in the West that once women are economically powered, have more control over their bodies, they actually choose not to have 5 to 10 children.
Sounds like a good point there. Thank you very much, Melissa. Very kind of you to come this morning.
Thank you.
On a wet, cold morning again.
Oh, and can I also give the New International Bookshop a quick plug? We have a series of events coming up next week on the 24th of March between 7 and 8:30 p.m. We have a talk by Aaron Gare on Towards an Ecological Civilization. So if you're interested in environmental struggle theory, please come along. It'll be a great activist talk. We also have quite a number of events happening on the New International Bookshop Facebook page and website, so definitely check it out. We have our first subversive cinema coming up on the 7th of April. This is a coup about the Syriza government, so check that out.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Cheers.
3CR Breakfast would like to say thank you to program sponsor, the New International Bookshop, for the financial support of this program. You can find the New International Bookshop in the basement of Trades Hall at 54 Victoria Street, Carlton.
And welcome back. Time to say goodbye. We've come to the end of the show. Thanks to Melissa Corbett, Margarita Windich, and Cam Walker, who kindly came in person to talk to us about the whole issue of ecological issues, feminist issues, earth issues.
Eco-socialism.
Yes, all
capitalism,
that.
Capitalism trashing the place.
Yes, give us a bit of a breathing space from capitalism. We will go on to some music. And before that, let's invite you again to a delicious breakfast at Friends of the Earth. And this has been a wonderful combination between Friends of the Earth and 3CR. Fantastic teamwork. Thoroughly enjoyed the show. I hope you did as well. And Zane, you're going to introduce the music next.
Yes, well, I think there's going to be a brief interlude. We're going to play a couple of songs while myself and Siphon get set up. But going by my alter ego, Dr. Fruit, myself and Siphon are going to be bringing some freestyle raps for you this morning. Over some beats by Jay Dilla, who does make a very pleasant hip-hop beat, I could tell you. So stick around for a bit of freestyle action.
Okay, that's a goodbye from Lalitha. Chalaya?
See ya from Zane in a minute.
And goodbye from Dennis.
Okay.
Hello.
All right. Well, coming to you live from 3CR. Can I just get a bit more monitor in my headphone? I'm Dr. Fruit. That's Siphon.
Yes.
Good morning.
Could I please get a little more microphone?
Can we get heaps of monitor?
Yeah, heaps of lots of monitor. Oh yes.
Sorry. Yeah, just crank. Oh yes. Yeah. That's okay. The stuff. Yeah.
Thank you very much, and welcome to 3CR. I hope you're feeling sexy because I'm not, and if you are. Well, that balances everything out.
It's all about the balance, isn't it?
It's all about balance. And I'm MC Siphon. I'm here with the Dr. Fruit, who has kindly invited me in a half-asleep state to attempt to freestyle.
And thank you so much for coming along, Siphon. And Siphon did tell me not to say this, but I'm going to embarrass you. Siphon's playing bass tonight with the Bon Scots at Yakandanda Folk Festival. So
yes,
he's done us all a great service by getting up nice and early this morning. All right, should I drop the Dilla?
Yes.
Let's do this. Oh, space bar doesn't work. What's that all about? This is some pioneering stuff, early morning freestyle things happening. Yeah. Right.
Dr. Fruit on the mic.
Let's kick off. Let's get this rap stuff flowing and growing from the ground at the Faux Studio. Yes. What do you know? What do you know? I think I know what I'm ready to do. I'm ready to bring this lyrical glue for you on the 3CR airwaves. Yes, it's true. We got Siphon into place, bringing these fat raps, and tonight he's gonna be slapping the bass. 1, 2. Can you give us some of that stuff, Mr. Siphon on the mic? Is it real rough? Is it too early in the morning for that? Or can you bring us some of that fat?
Some of the fat, I'm about to drop it in the center with the lyrical rap. Hold on, yeah, you're invited to get excited. Otherwise, vote for Palmer United. Otherwise, you can find me in the sewer, talking carburetors with Ricky Muir. About to get it on the fat, the simple truth.
trap. I'm about to drop it with a simple kind of rap. The man upon the point, I bring the joint. The simple kind of lyrical precision with the point. Mr. Dr. Fruit upon the microphone to drop up with the stuff. I bring the hot, about to bring the rough. Right from the center with the lyrical adventure. I bring it like a poem for center from the center. If you get this stuff, you get well bent. Hot from friends of the earth, we bring it down to bar. Talking on the radio, 3CR. Hold on, Dr. Fruit about to drop. Drop the microphone to center from the spot.
We bring the freestyles with the blockade. We got the stuff hailing from the tradition of the Eureka Stockade. The stockade, the blockade, coming to your brain. Yes, we bring the strike in the rain. Yeah, we got the red flags and the black flags and the green flags and the yellow triangles coming to get your brain mangled with the 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's the Siphon MC and the Dr. Fruit taking it out to the edge of the galaxy. Yes, we cut through the lyrical fallacies and bring the balance back, you see. Because it's not too early when the sun is dawning, we bring the stuff that's scorning of the powers of political elites, bringing the stuff to Smith Street.
I just felt sexy for a moment right there, but it's past.
You got a glimmer?
Yeah, I got a glimmer. About to hit the beats, get the rhymes when they simmer.
Ooh.
Right through the center when you get the thinner.
Yes.
I'm like paint thinner when I drain your brain and get you insane into the center. Hold on. When I get the cold on, I'm like a freezer, the man about to believe ya. I'm the conceiver of the lyrical or spiritual, never spiritual. I went to the doctor, they did a blood test and proved me type A political. Check it with the style, I get down. Got to hit it like a clown. You don't need to frown when the beats get down. It's the Dr. Fruit with the rhymes to boot. We bring it down like a rubbish goes down the chute. Hold on to the step, I bring enough to the bass clef. Pump it with the styles you left. Hold on, it's the morning, about to drop it with fresh Melbourne. What you doing when we're holding it left? It's the Dr. Fruit.
Time to take away the stress when we're bringing the sound of the lyrical caness and the forest, the canary, not being scary. Come up with the sound of the ultra hairy. Yes, don't shave your armpits if you don't want to, but if you do want to, that's okay too. Yes, it's the 1, 2, 3. Get the connection. Come up with the two MCs and the inflection of the mic all channeled into the middle of the mirror, bringing the sound of the Gambira to get near ya. Yes, we're bringing the heat, so gather round the hearse when we're here on Smith Street at the Friends of the Earth. We're giving birth to live freestyle raption. The action, get a fraction, get a friction, get it into your ear. The sparks, the volts, the voltage. We're coming through like trams when we're bringing the grams of pure fatness. Yes, yeah. We've got the raps that you can plug into your atlas in your brain. Going around the world, bringing the cure to the pain. We're bringing it swirly, swirly. Oh, yes, girly, male. Masculine, trans, in the middle, anything goes. When we're getting the flows going and growing, Mr. Siphon, what you got blowing?
Did it just get sexy there for a moment? I think it did.
Ooh.
Alright, fair enough. I'm like a warm summer's day on a beach in the Bahamas with a tropical cocktail made from bananas. I've got sexy knees. I'm immaculately finished like Fabio's face before the bird flew in it. I'm Adonis. If I took off my shirt, you'd be astonished. I can say I'm unattractive, but no. Let's be honest. I'm the pinnacle of man. Comparable cause to Zeus, I give women more horns.
The moose antelope ear, give it to your dog and the dog will get severe. I heard that that's actually a snack these days. Antler for your puppy. What goes? Hey, but when I finish this, I gotta take my van to get fixed. Yeah, it's been leaking oil like Exxon Valdez. I hate Mercedes Benz and I'm not being libelous. No, just the liveness.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so far the experiment is going okay.
I would say...
See, Margie?
To a degree.
To a degree. There's been
goodbye
glimpses of success amongst the...
Yeah.
yeah. Amongst the early morning drop torture.
It, drop it. Dr. Fruit and Siphon. Drop it. Mm. Drop it. Drop it. Dr. Fruit and Siphon will be dropping. We drop it. Drop it. Dr. Fruit and Siphon when we drop it.
Drop it.
Drop it. Drop it. Dr. Fruit and Siphon when we drop it.
Ooh.
About to bring the ones into the center of your pocket. Hold it from the center, you can hold it in your wallet. Pull out the change when I bring the deranged brain strain to bring the center of the pain. Heinous, painous. Right in center. Swirling round Venus. Right into the space. Right into the outer. When I bring the stuff, it comes through the spouter. If I bring the door, the outer. Dr. Fruit upon the microphone to doubt ya.
Woo, 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 woo. I use bolts to put pieces of metal together in any weather. When I bring in the rap that's like a feather to tickle you under the nose, under the chin, in the ear. I've got the raps come up with the swing, laying them tiles on the floor. It's the constructivist kicking in your door, putting it together. The frame come first and then we give birth to the platform. Then it's time for the skin, chuck on the roof and the outside, and then it's time for the proof. Put them doors on so you can lock up. We got the sound of the flows coming through, so don't cock up. Don't use swear words on the radio in the morning early. It's not okay, no. Nah, we keep it clean when we're bringing the raps that are obscene, but not too obscene. Yes, don't be mean, just level with this. When we're bringing it crisp, it's nicely cut apart with the sound of the art. Ah, Siphon, can you take over, you mystical python?
No swear words?
Well, only low-level swear words, not
low-level
like
swear words.
Real, like, intense ones.
What, like a...
I'm sure you
Palmer.
Can. I'm sure you can think of.
Can I say Clive Palmer on the radio?
It's borderline. It's borderline on
okay,
this stage.
Sorry about that. Right. No swear words. Okay. I'll try this. I'll try this. It's difficult.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right. When I get the beep, sweat beep. Yeah, hold on. When I get the beep, I just beep your beep. When it hits. Oh, sorry. Try the next one. I bring it with the sum, like an equation. The man. Australian, about to bring it in your brain. Confusing, if I'm fusing, infusing you like a herbal tea. The style gets verbal like a gerbil. Goes E? I think that's what they do. Anyway, I bring the raps to you with the Dr. Fruit with the groove. Now we're about to prove it from a blast. When I bring the future to the past, that's time travel, about to unravel like a ribbon on the present with the pavel. I bring it like gravel, that's rough. Bring it with the rough, the stuff that Mr. Dr. Fruit about to show you. Rhymes about to flow right through you.
I got my fruit boots and my suit, and I'm bringing the cure to the truth. Yes, lies and fiction. When I bring this, it's the lyrical addiction coming into the place. Check the pump of bass from the Siphon, flipping it, bringing the sound when we're ripping it. Can you get that 1-2-3-0, the K-O, Gray-O? What's that person in the suit with the play-o? Ah, look at the sky, it's all gray. It's full of rain and that's good for me, eh? Cause I'm a plant and I like some nourishment. When I bring the sound of the bubbler to bubble it, bubbling up from the soil like a spring, bringing the raps that will leave you feeling pretty good. You got a grin on your face. We're checking this, and tonight you're gonna be slapping the bass.
Dark and twisted in the storm's way, flakes of the fake fall forth. Please fight to excavate the eyesight. Night lights shut to keep the vines from the walls. Reek hot balls. When I bring the stuff, I make the bird calls from the beach to the sea, to the sea, to the air to breathe. I bring the stuff that conceives, receive. Is that the beat? Is that it? Are we done?
I think there's just a little bit more.
One more.
Right. If we could be so bold.
Oh yeah, this one.
Yeah, that one. Alright, I'm gonna do a written. I'm gonna cheat. You thought you were living in the land of luxury, but it depends if you're in the mining industry. If so, welcome to the 2% using resource extraction to pay the rent. I spare a thought for the original owners, cause like it or not, they get treated like donors. Give us your land rights for beads and feathers as we sell the coal and invoke the bad weather. And meanwhile, guess who's getting locked at apartheid rates by mostly white cops? That's right, yo, the original owners, the ones who were forced to act as donors. You thought you were living in the land of luxury, but then you get sent to the penitentiary, or as we call it, a jail. What I call it is an epic fail. You get mad cash if you stuff the planet, but if you do street art, you get in the slammer. They never asked us if we wanted to sell, but then they sell state assets, and not that well, spraying them corporate logos on our common property as if they own a whole board in the game of Monopoly. Well, don't be surprised when we bring the spanners, put them in the works and bring the red banners to wave in the face of the powers that be and say, you know what, don't with me. Cause we will tear a large hole in your nutsack. You suckers are whack, and it's a very disgrace the way you're crapping on the future's face. That's right.
Under construction, the city pumps out fumes. Factories fill the sky with black smoke and steel dreams. Drills grind away at the cement like man dunes, while factories fill the smoke with black smoke. Factories fill the smoke with black smoke and steel dreams. Drills grind away at the cement like man dunes, while noxious chemicals fill the streets in full dreams. Unknown screams, maybe murder or happiness. Gangs cruise the streets in the drug-fueled madness. I bring the style, coming with the doctor fruit. Try to do a little.
And that was Siphon and Dr. Fruit playing live at Friends of the Earth in Smith Street, Collingwood. You've been listening to 3CR's Sustainable Breakfast Series, so now stay tuned for Beyond Zero. And that is the completion of Sustainable Breakfast. I'll be back again next year.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia, on the Kulin Nation. For more information and to find out how you can support 3CR, go to www.3cr.org.au.